Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Pearls Before Swine department here at Car Talk Plaza.
So I guess that means you want me to speak first this week? I do have pearls of wisdom that someone sent us. Someone.
Really?
We don't know who. They're probably all stolen. But here they are. I gave my son a hint. On the door to his room, I put a sign. Checkout time is 18. And I think George Collins said this one. How come we choose from just two people for president, but 50 for Miss America? Home is where you can say anything you like because nobody's listening to you anyway. I knew that one. Regular naps prevent old age. Did you know that?
Yes.
Especially if you take them while you're driving.
Yeah, that'll be old age preventative.
Here's the one I like the best. I have learned that there is very little difference in husbands, so you might as well keep the first one. I've convinced my wife of that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which wife?
Well, I obviously didn't convince the first few.
But the current one.
The current wife thinks that we're all the same.
Well, she's probably right. Yeah. Well, look, if you're looking for pearls of wisdom about your car,
you came to the wrong place.
Right. But call us anyway, because who knows? You never know. Something good might happen. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Calling from Franklin, West Virginia.
Hi, Anna. My daughter's name is Anna.
Great.
And she's from Franklin, West Virginia, too.
She is. Yeah. What's
going on, Anna?
I have a 1998 Volvo station wagon, and it over the last 2 weeks, it started doing this thing where it'll only start if I park it facing downhill.
Really?
Yes.
And when it doesn't start, it does crank.
Exactly. It'll crank. It'll try and try really hard. And then I'll actually have to take my key out of the ignition and put it back in. And when I try it the second time, it'll work perfectly, as if nothing was wrong. But the first time, it won't do anything.
Oh, so no matter how you parked, if you take the key out and put it back in, it works?
Yes, the second time. But if I park facing downhill, it'll start on the first try perfectly, like there's no problem, every single time.
This had to be the first call of the day.
Well, does it matter how much gas is in the tank?
No, it doesn't matter how much gas or the temperature or precipitation or anything. The only common denominator I can find is how the car's parked. And I will tell you that if I park my car for like an hour or less, then it's fine too.
This is a V70. Is that what this thing is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does it have an alarm system?
No.
Jeez.
All right. Here's what I'm working on. I got an immediate feeling about fuel injection.
Very good. That's very good because so do I.
And the problem is pressure.
I've had a little pressure myself.
Now, beyond that, I can't say that I have any specific details, but I'm working on that too.
Actually, what I'm hinging my whole hypothesis on here is the fuel pump relay.
Yeah.
Fuel pump relay.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know how yet or why, but I'm just guessing that maybe the contact on the relay,
I like that,
is somehow affected by the orientation of the car.
Yeah.
Especially when the thing gets to sit for a long period of time, but it just could be a bad pump.
Where is the relay?
Under
the hood.
I believe it's under the dashboard, but I'm not positive. I don't think I've ever changed one on a 98 V70, which is also a reason to distrust that theory. Because we've never changed one. And nor have I. But why would the pump be so sensitive to orientation? Jeez, Anna. I don't know, but I'm going to suggest you call your Volvo dealer and ask them if they've ever heard of the relay going bad on one of these V70s and causing this problem. And if they say yes, buy yourself a new fuel pump relay and plug it in.
Okay.
Because I think that is your best shot.
Great.
And try calling some other show. Maybe they'll know. See you later.
Thanks
so much. Great, Anna. This is great for starting off the show. You've built up our confidence, and we're just ready to answer anybody else's questions.
Yeah. Well,
and
you can. To be of help.
You can rest assured that you will be back on Stump the Chumps.
Wonderful. Yeah. I'll look forward to it.
Oh, yeah. You can count on that.
Okay.
Jeez. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227. Wow. You know, it could be a bad ignition switch, too. It could be. I feel Anna!
Nah.
Yeah, I think it could be a bad switch, so that maybe when she's taking it out and putting the key back in again, it's now making the right contact and energizing the pump. Or we're assuming that the fuel is the issue, but it could easily be spark. But it's you know, and maybe by taking the key out and putting it back in, she's getting a good contact. Why it does it so reliably the second time, I don't know. You know, and why the orientation would have something to do with it, I don't know that either.
Yeah. And the trouble is, she can't take it anywhere unless they have, like, a hill inside the garage.
Well, they'll jack it up overnight.
Yeah.
Put it up on the lift and drop it off the lift like I know how to do it. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Steve calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hey, Hi. Steve. What's up, man?
I have a 1998 Honda CR-V, and I'm looking for a little car advice, but also helping me out with a little ethical dilemma. Last week, I got out to my car in the morning and had been storming out most of the night. And when I sat down in my driver's side seat, in the corner of my eye, I could see ripples in the waves. There was a pond of water in the floor of the passenger side of my car.
Oh.
And I left no windows open. Oh. Everything was fully sealed. But I had about 2 inches of water sitting on the floor, so I had to get a towel from the bathtub and soak up the water and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And so my question is where is the water coming from? But more importantly,
the sky.
Yeah,
the sky.
I figured that. But I'm buying a new car, and so I'm looking to trade this in.
Oh.
And I don't know, do I tell them? Do I get it fixed? I'm kind of questioning that right now.
Well, it's probably coming in through the windshield.
Okay.
But the big question is, do you tell anybody?
Right. I consider myself to be a fairly ethical person.
You
so
do.
I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah, no.
Then why do you have to call us to find out you didn't tell anybody?
Yeah, and will what we tell you affect what you do, you think?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Are you looking for us to reaffirm that you should divulge what happened? Or are you looking for us to say, nah, no one ever tells? I mean, you could think of it this way. Used car dealers are all, what, sleazeballs.
Right,
and they would never divulge to you.
Exactly.
I mean, have you ever gone to look at a used car and seen a sign in there that says, had water on floor in front? Never, right?
Right.
Now, of the thousands of cars that might be in that lot, there might be hundreds of defects.
Right.
None of them are ever divulged.
Right.
You know?
So are you planning to buy a new car and trade this into a dealership?
Yeah, I think that's going to be – I would – feel worse trade or selling it to somebody privately because of knowing the problem.
Yeah.
I don't feel that bad about the
about screwing it.
No, but I think you got to. Oh, jeez. See this?
Oh.
Well, this is how it starts. Because let me just explain what I think happens. So, now the dealers started off as just an honorable people.
Right.
And then people traded cars in, and either by intent or by accident, they didn't divulge some little defects. Now, of course, you might say, look, I wouldn't be trading in this car if it didn't have some faults. If it were perfect, I would keep it, obviously.
And I'm not the expert. You figure out what's wrong with it.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, something like this, it's entirely possible that you could have missed this whole thing. What if you were away for a week?
Yeah.
And the water just kind of disappeared.
Right.
When you trade this thing in and the dealer finds out that you have this leak, then he has to be responsible for fixing it. And then he has to foot the bill.
Right.
Because the subsequent buyer goes back to the dealer and complains, and he says, that damn Steve, he didn't tell me that he had a leak. And so what's his motivation now the next time he sells a car is not to divulge some defect that car has. He figures it's fair.
Right.
I got screwed, and I'm going to just pass it along to the next customer.
See, now this doesn't solve the problem.
No, it does.
No,
but,
I mean,
but if you, but.
I understand, but I was going to suggest that
Steve can change the whole culture here. Steve,
yes.
One person, you
Steve,
can change the whole car
you
selling
go
culture.
In and fess up. You say that thing leaked water, there's a leak someplace, I know you guys can fix it, and then I'll trade it in.
Oh, you have it fixed first.
You have it fixed first. At least tell the dealership.
Oh, no, I think that's better, actually. I think it's better. Here's what you do. You take it to whomever, and you have it fixed. Now, if they fix it, and it rains again, and you see no leak, now you can trade the thing in and don't have to say anything to anybody.
Right.
Because that's right.
You don't have to go in and say, well, look, I had a brake job done. I had a muffler done. You don't have to list all the repairs you've had done. This is just another repair.
But the only thing wrong with this is the reason that I'm suggesting it is that it's going to be relatively inexpensive to fix.
Okay.
Oh, if it was expensive, you'd tell them to sleaze
his way. If it was something that was going to cost $2,000, I wouldn't tell
them. No, I think we're sending Steve mixed messages.
Well, that's what I think, too.
I like Tommy's idea of not divulging it to the dealer to whom you trade the car in, but rather to get the thing fixed so that when you do trade it in, you don't have to say anything to them because the car has no defects that you know of.
And you don't think it's going to cost that much to fix?
No.
No, it's probably going to entail taking the windshield out and resealing it.
Okay.
And it's a few hundred bucks.
Okay.
But I think if you wait for a dry spell and then you trade it in,
right.
I think that would be unethical. And then would just encourage dealers to pass on those kinds of defects to other customers.
But, what if it was not a couple hundred bucks? What if it was $500?
Yeah.
Well, would you still give the same advice?
Of course
what
I would.
What if it were $800?
Oh, $800, no. but for $500, no.
I have to say, this is a very, very difficult question, and I don't
If it was $500 or $800, then I would trade it in, divulge the defect, and tell them I got an estimate for $200, but I didn't have time to get it fixed. No, but don't forget, it might be $800 retail.
Right.
So for them, it might only be $200 if they get one of their guys.
That's no good.
Well, I think if you can't have it fixed in advance of the trade-in, then you have to divulge what it is and let them then determine what it would cost to fix it and how much they should discount the trade-in.
Even if it's like an automatic transmission?
No matter what it is.
It's a $2,000 transmission?
No, you can't condone sleazeballism because then you just encourage the used car dealers to continue the process.
Oh, I agree.
You know, so the reason that people get shafted when they buy used cars is because guys like you and this sleazeball Steve are trading cars in that have defects that don't get divulged. Divulge everything, and then these guys will develop a conscience. Nah, it's not going to happen. Well, Steve, you do what you think is best, but I think, that you should fix it.
Oh, I think so, too.
No matter what it costs, unless you can't afford to fix it, in which case you should divulge it.
Okay.
And I think if we can change the whole used car culture in this country. Steve, I'm telling
you,
this could be a grassroots effort here. The whole movement, Steve, could be named after you.
Well, I'll take that command then.
Okay, Steve.
Okay, Steve.
Carry forth, my son.
I will.
Oh, God. Good luck, man.
Thanks a lot, guys.
See you later.
Man.
See what happens when you try to answer ethical questions. I'll stick to the automotive stuff. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Joe from Toledo.
Joe, what's going on, man?
Not much. I got a 2000 Chrysler Cirrus.
Okay.
Got 120,000 miles on it. Mm. And when I pull out of my parking spot...
But you're not from Toledo.
I'm from Somerville.
We knew that.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yes.
Not to be confused with many of the other Somervilles that
they don't rate.
They don't rate.
Of course, I left, so how much does that really say?
Well, who knows?
But you live in Toledo now.
Yeah.
So you got 120K on this thing, commuting back and forth from Toledo to Somerville.
Actually, I do that trip quite a bit, but yeah.
Okay. So what's the problem?
Well, when it's cold, when I first started, like at night or in the morning if I'm going somewhere, when I pull out of the parking spot, the steering wheel jerks. Like it's pulsing the power to turn the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes away soon enough, but it's every time if it's the slightest bit colder.
So what you mean is that if you start out and you're not really holding onto the steering wheel, the steering wheel will jerk left or right.
No, only if I try to turn.
Like right. In other words,
only when you try to turn.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the power steering is working, not working, working, not working, and it's jerking in that way, that you find it difficult to turn, and then it gets easy, then difficult, then easy.
Well, it's more like it won't, and then it will, it won't, and then it
exactly.
will.
Exactly.
Yeah. I tried to overcome it, and I can't.
Right, but once you've been driving it for 5 minutes, it's all fixed up.
Yep.
All right, you want the good news or the bad news first?
I got to go.
Thanks for calling, Joe.
It's been a pleasure, yeah.
Nice talking to a guy from Somerville.
No, it could easily be something as inexpensive and simple as either tightening or replacing the power steering belt.
Okay.
Or it could be that the power steering pump is no good or giving up. Or I guess the worst case scenario is it's the rack and pinion giving out.
That would be the worst case scenario. Yeah.
But I would say there's a very good chance that it's just the belt.
Well, there's a serpentine and a V-belt.
There's a V-belt just for the pump.
Is it? I forget what it's for. I just looked there. It's so buried, I don't go any further.
Yeah.
Take it to the gas station around the corner and tell them what's going on, and maybe they can just tighten the belt.
I like that. I could almost afford that.
I know.
You could.
Good luck, man.
Thank you for your time.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, it's time for me to turn to my older brother and ask, do you remember the subject of last week's Puzzler?
Oh, you're always asking me this. And as a matter of fact, yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah. It was crap, as I remember.
Well, that's not very nice. I mean, somebody sent that in. I mean, you're not going to hurt my feelings, but some poor listener who worked on the puzzle.
No. That's what you said last week. You're driving along and you were looking at craps.
No. Crops. Looking at crops, you bonehead. It was an agricultural puzzler, and we'll be back with the whole story in just a minute. Crops, you stupid.
Driving in a highway on a Saturday night, my eyes are wide open for some beautiful sight. Look to my left, what did I see? Blue-eyed blonde staring back at HB. She was a BMW girl. She was a BMW girl.
And even though Terry Gross fishes that brochure for auctioneer's school out of the trash whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's crop puzzler.
Oh, you don't say. It's about crops, is it?
Cut it out. Anyway, this was sent in by someone named Chris Inman. I don't know whether Chris is a guy or a gal, but it hardly matters. And anyway, Chris said, it
matters to someone.
Last summer, I was driving across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast. Can you visualize this?
I can see it.
And I was somewhere in Kansas, the middle of nowhere, and it was around noontime. For miles and miles, I was surrounded by farms that are raising a single crop. It's beautiful to look at, but there's something confusing going on. When I look to my right, I see fields of yellow. When I look to my left, I see fields of green, and yet it's all one crop. How could that be? What's going on?
I got it. What you see growing is corn. On the right, you look to your right and you see yellow.
Yes.
Because the sun must be over there. Sun rises in
the
south.
You've never seen corn in its natural habitat, have you?
Does the sun rise in the south or not?
Well, it depends on whether or not you're from the south. If you're from Dixie, then the sun rises in the south.
I have no idea.
Well, you're close. At noontime, the sun is in the northern hemisphere. The sun is not overhead. It's in the south.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, I was right then. The sun is in the south.
Yes, the sun is in the south. And it's not corn because you can't see corn unless you get it. The only time you can see the yellow of corn is at the supermarket.
When it's in
those blister packs.
You mean they don't come all peeled?
They don't come all peeled.
Oh.
But what you're seeing is something called heliotropism.
What's that?
And that's the tendency for plants to turn and face the sun. And the plants on the left side of the road
are turned away from you.
Turned away from me and toward the sun. And so I'm looking at the backs of those plants, the ones on my left. And the ones on my right, I'm looking at the front of those plants. And those plants are sunflowers. And sunflowers turn and face the sun. And they're following the sun during
the
day.
What does sunflowers got to do with corn?
It's not corn at all. That's the crop that's growing.
Oh, it's not. It's not corn.
It's not corn.
Oh, sunflowers are growing. That's a crop? They're flowers.
No. Birds eat sunflower seeds. You eat sunflower seeds. They're actually a cash crop.
They are.
Farmers actually grow sunflowers, yeah.
So they got fields and fields of sunflowers
growing?
So
when you look to your right, you are seeing
Flower.
The flower, which is facing south.
And when you're looking to your left, you're seeing the backside
of the
flower.
You're seeing the backs of the heads of the sunflowers.
I'm always getting the backside.
You're getting the backside.
Oh, man.
You got
what
it?
What else is new?
So who's our winner?
Hey, the winner is Frank Morgan from Williamstown, Massachusetts. And for having your answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, you are going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division of CarTalk.com. And with that gift certificate, you can pick up our Father's CD collection just in time for Father's Day. Why you should never listen to your father when it comes to cars. You have to hurry, though. We only have a few hundred million of these sitting in the basement.
Well, anyway, we'll have a new, I guess, mathematical puzzle coming up in the third half of the show. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, you can give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-8227-8225555. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm calling from Oakland, California.
Hi, Michelle. What's going on?
Oakland.
Yeah, we've been to Oakland.
Yeah, nice place.
Yeah.
It is. I just moved from San Francisco. I'm loving it.
Oh, yeah?
And what's so different about the two? I mean, I know they're different, but what makes you not love San Francisco?
I love San Francisco, too.
Oh, cool.
What's better about Oakland?
Well, what's better about it is my husband loves it better.
Oh, and what does he love about it?
He thinks it's, like, really diverse and funkier and actually much less lonely than San Francisco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people engage you in conversation in Oakland, whereas...
Kind of, yeah. And there's just more people around, and there's the sun and the warmth, which always helps.
Oh, yeah. Seeing the sun is always an uplifting thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm from Manhattan, so, you know, it's all sort of alien to me to begin with.
So you've never seen the sun.
It's all paradise to you.
It's all paradise to me.
So anyway, Michelle, what's going on?
I have a 99 Honda Accord LX. And about a year ago, my husband started telling me that he felt something really weird in the gas pedal, but it wasn't until about 2 months ago that I started feeling it.
Uh-huh.
He told me I had to say that, so I got that part out. He found it first.
He found it first.
Okay.
Big deal.
It's very marked now. When I press the gas pedal after I haven't been in the car, you know, anywhere from 10 minutes to overnight, when I get in the car and press the gas pedal, there's like this barrier. It presses down about a quarter of an inch, and then there's this like block.
I have to push through it,
and I lurch, and then the accelerator is just fine, and there's no problem. But it's always that getting it started.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like this block.
And as the engine warms up, does this problem disappear?
It seems that way. I mean, it seems like once I break through the barrier, that's what I call it, it warms up. It's just fine. There's no problem. And then if I were to park it, run into a store, and come back out, it would be fine. But if I were to park it and, you know, go have lunch with someone and come back, I'd have to go through the same thing again.
How long are these lunches?
That was wishful thinking, really.
Oh, I see. That was just by example. If I were to have lunch with somebody, not when I have lunch with somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I was imagining I was like one of these people who lunch, you know?
Oh, yes.
Well, what you have is your car, like most modern cars, has something called a throttle body, which houses the throttle plate. And in your car... modern cars don't do it with a cable, but your car has a cable which connects your gas pedal inside the car to a bell crank which operates this throttle plate. And the plate...
And what it does is it opens up when you step on the gas to allow air to come in.
And when more air rushes in, the fuel injectors sense that and they say, oh, Let's send in more fuel, and that's what makes the car go faster.
Is that okay. What makes fools rush in also?
Yeah, fools rush in.
We're no man, whatever.
So anyway, so what's happening is that plate, which is supposed to move freely in that housing, which is called the throttle body, is getting stuck. And it's either getting stuck because there's a lot of carbon buildup in there, or it's just worn out, and the metal of the plate has started to dig into the metal of the throttle body, which is aluminum. So we found in almost all cases that cleaning that throttle body, in other words, taking the thing apart and giving it a good cleaner with a solvent, is usually enough to fix this problem.
And it's cheap.
Okay.
And it's cheap. Okay. Yeah. So and I can give you the worst case scenario, and that is that it, I don't know how many miles you have in this car, but
120, 130.
Yeah, well, it's possible that the thing is worn out. You may need a new throttle body, but I don't think so. I think cleaning it will do it.
I think so, too.
I think you've got 120,000 miles worth of crud in there.
Yeah.
Crud is a technical term. So if he cleans the crud, you're good to go.
And if it's not good, so I get another one, and is that outrageously expensive?
Yeah, you know, don't call back. I don't think you're mentally prepared to take that information today. See you, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right, you know what time it is now?
Time to airbrush our photos with a mechanic's swimsuit calendar?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps! This is the embarrassing part of the show where we track down a previous caller.
And see how things are going for him in the rehab hospital. So who's our lucky contestant this week?
Well, I don't remember him yet, but it's Raymond from Utah. I don't remember him.
Gee, I should, shouldn't I?
Raymond called us to complain about a noise that his Chevy Lumina was making.
It started making this strange noise when I turned the fan on. Whether it's now, of course, we're into air conditioning weather, but either way, it doesn't matter.
Oh, sure. Rub it in. Now we're in air conditioning weather. Sure.
We're still wearing our Bronco Nagurski long underwear, and you guys have your air conditioners on. Okay.
Southern Utah does have its advantages.
See if you get a right answer.
So you turn on the heater or air conditioner.
I turn on the heater or air conditioner, and the minute I turn it up to any speed over low, I get this nasty kind of sound going on. And when it first started, it sounded actually like somebody stuck a chicken bone in a fan.
Yeah, I got a problem with all of this. At least he has a heater. I don't even have a place to store my chicken bones.
So what did we tell him was wrong? I don't remember.
Well, we told him that something probably got caught in there and broke off one of the blades of the blower motor and that he had to replace the blower motor.
Oh, the blower motor fan, actually.
Yeah.
The fan. Yeah. Well, let's see how we did. Raymond, are you there?
I am here.
All right, look, before we find out whether we had our heads up our own blower motors, we need to Carmen Mirandize you.
Okay.
All right. We have not spoken to you since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the answer you're about to give here in Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or the courtside season's tickets we sent you for the Utah Jazz.
Also correct. The Jazz tickets were irrelevant.
All right. So was it the blower motor?
In a way, yes. It wasn't quite what you said.
In a way.
In a way.
Well, the judges will have to decide whether this is a right answer or not. In a way.
What you had told me.
Yeah.
Was that blade had probably broken off a little rotor thing that looks like a hamster run.
Right. It's a squirrel cage blower. Right.
What you'd said is something had probably gotten in there, broken in the blade, and of course that had unbalanced the whole rotor and it was gradually getting worse.
Sounded good. You bought it, right?
Yeah, well, I went and checked.
I'm surprised that we said that because I don't think I would have said that.
I must have disagreed.
I would have thought it was just a stick in there.
We have the original tape.
What I did is I had a brother-in-law that was coming down a couple weekends later. So we went in there. We actually took the entire motor assembly off and looked at it, and it wasn't a blade. The problem was, however, that where the rotor attaches to the motor itself.
Oh, it come loose.
It had broken.
Oh, it cracked.
Yeah, so it was hitting the motor housing and all that kind of stuff, which was making all the noise.
Yeah, I think that was good.
The judges have decided that that's a win. I would say so, too.
Because we said something was broken.
Something was broken. It needn't have been a blade. I think it qualifies.
Anything that's broken qualifies.
I mean, on the other hand, you'd be hard-pressed to have been wrong. The guy tells us that he turns on the fan, and it makes a horrible noise, and we tell him there's something wrong with the fan.
Yeah.
It's broken.
Yeah.
And we win a prize for that?
All right. All right, well, we'll call it a draw. We'll call it a push.
Why not?
As they say in Vegas, it's a push.
It's a push, yeah.
It was a rotor, and it was a very minor, basically, repair. It was something I could actually take care of myself.
Well, good for you.
Yep, thank you.
And I'm glad we didn't cost you any unnecessary money.
You did not. I appreciate it.
Thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Raven.
See you, Raven.
Thank you.
If you hear someone on the show that you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, you know, an answer that you're convinced is wrong and you want us to really look bad.
Yeah, and try not to freeze up the entire internet, but you can email us your suggestion from cartalk.com. I mean, this could cause a major blackout on the East Coast.
Or you can call and try to stump us right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 8-882-782-55. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Leo from Pennsylvania.
Leo.
I got a sort of a family issue. It's a small question, but it causes a family problem here for me.
Yeah.
When I go to the gas station, especially in the winter, since I have a car with heated seats, I like to keep the car running and just fill it up with gas and never turn it off and, you know, just zoom out.
It's illegal, isn't it?
I don't know, but the problem is the wife immediately turns the key. You know, she insisted we're in danger of blowing up or something, and I've never blown up, and I just wanted to know, you know, who's
yet.
Right. Is she?
Well, most people who have blown up haven't mentioned it.
Well, we haven't had any calls from them to warn us.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think the danger is that it's going to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
here's the danger.
At some level, that is the danger.
But I think the larger danger is this. If the car is running, it just removes one more step of the process of getting the car moving.
Mm-hmm.
So that if somebody were to nudge the shifter, for example, it's possible then for the car to jerk. Let's say you had a standard shift car.
Right.
And while it's sitting there running in neutral, somebody, like your dog, jumps to get its plaything and shifts the thing into first gear, at which point the car would shoot forward. And it would yank that hose probably right out of its socket at the other end of the pump.
Right.
And it would begin to spray gasoline all over the filling station, including your pants.
I see.
You got it?
Yeah.
I think that's the primary reason that you shut the car off.
And it is illegal in most states, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I mean, isn't there a sign that says, when you pull into the gas station, that says turn off engine?
But it's kind of like, you know, those, you know, the cups, you know, you go and you get a cup of a hot drink and it says, careful, this may
burn
you.
Yeah, don't spill this on your lap,
you
may have to sue us.
All right. So you recommend, so you side more with her.
More with her. 100%, Leo. I mean,
okay.
Let's get it straight. We're not on your side at all.
All right, so I won't be doing any more misdemeanors then.
You're taking the basic guy's approach. Let me get this right now.
Yeah.
The basic guy's approach is, there are rules about lots of things.
Right.
And we don't really have to pay much attention to most of that
stuff. No, you know why?
Because it's for idiots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Most
exactly.
guys believe the rules are for morons.
Exactly.
Just like most speeders are guys because the speed limits are made for people who don't know how to handle their cars.
That's right. But I have great reflexes, and I can see 10 miles ahead of me.
And I can drive on the sidewalk.
So there's no reason for me not to drive 75 miles an hour, even though it says 50 miles an hour. The limit is for little old ladies.
Well, the logic is irrefutable to me.
All right, I'll just tell her it's a guy thing.
Hey, you do what you think is best, Leo.
You have a garage with heat
that you can sleep in?
You'll be sleeping there tonight.
Right. Hey,
Leo,
thank you.
That's a good question. Thanks for calling.
I appreciate it.
See you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I think it's the case that I think if you surveyed people,
yeah.
you would find that most guys obey the rules selectively.
Well,
and most women obey all the rules. My wife would never think of parking at a meter without putting money in it. When was the last time you put money in a parking meter?
Parking meter.
All right, I rest my case. Well, look, we're at that point.
Don't you have a little 3x5 card that says meter broken?
Yeah,
I got it with the duct tape stuck right to it.
Dymo label.
Stuck right to the dashboard.
Well, look, we're at that point of the show again. You know that point?
Is this where the NPR higher-ups parade two real mechanics by our studio and glare at us threateningly? Is that it?
No, this is where we take a break to prepare for the new puzzler.
Ah, it's good. We'll be back in just a minute.
I've been driving through the pounding rain one night with my tape deck wipers and my check engine light. The world had been reduced to black and white.
change a flat tire in the rain. After learning what it is to hydroplane, I searched the entire trunk for my spare. The donut must have shrunk into thin air. I know it's rare for a scarecrow to complain. That's why I'm singing in the breakdown lane.
And even though NPR's mailboy looks both ways, then feeds our paycheck into the shredder whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
I can hardly...
I wouldn't get that excited.
You said it was a mathematical puzzle.
Well, here it is. This is from the... The Hat in the River series of puzzlers. It's imagine this. It's the first day of spring or summer or whatever. You decide to rent a little boat at the dock and go for a little boat ride.
Yeah.
So you do that. You get in the little boat, little rowboat, and you begin to paddle upstream. You with me so far?
Row. You're rowing or you're paddling. You're not doing both.
Oh,
I
no?
happen to be an expert in this whole area.
Okay. So you're paddling, you're rowing, two oars.
Two oars.
Okay, you got two oars and you're rowing.
People say I don't have two oars in the water. What do they mean by that? So I'm rowing, okay.
You're rowing upstream and you get a mile from the dock, a mile from where you put the boat in the water, and your hat flies off, okay? You're rowing upstream.
Yeah.
You say, forget it. Mm-hmm. And you keep rowing or paddling, as whatever the case may be.
Get it on my way back.
Then you realize that your two tickets to that night's Sleepy LaBeef concert are tucked inside the sweatband.
Oh.
So you've rowed away from the falling hat for 10 minutes. Okay,
yeah.
So you roll a mile upstream, the hat falls off.
Yeah.
You row for another 10 minutes, at which point you say, the tickets.
Yeah.
And you turn around. And you start rowing again. You're rowing with the same number of strokes that you were.
Yeah.
Okay, the same intensity that you were upstream and downstream.
Got it.
You catch up with the hat right at the point where you first took off with the boat, right at the dock.
And I know what the question is.
The question is...
How fast is the current?
There you go. Now, I want to give you a hint.
Go ahead. Give me a hint.
Well, you don't need algebra to solve this.
Ah!
In fact... You probably shouldn't use algebra. It would complicate it.
Really?
Yeah, that's the hint.
Wow.
I mean, everyone's... What was the first thing you were going to
write down? X equals the rate of the river.
Right. I think it was Bertrand Russell who wrote a little book called The Dawn of Nothing, or How Algebra Began.
Did he?
Yeah, I don't know. I may have made that up, but it sounded good. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or tape it to the handlebars of a metallic blue Lightspeed Tanazi mountain bike with 18-inch geometrically enhanced titanium alloy frame, Shimano XTR components, and RockShox suspension forks. And ride that right over to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 022. 38, or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But call us right now if you have a question, because we're dying to give out more wrong answers. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
How you doing?
Hi, who's this?
This is Dan, calling from New Hampshire.
Hey, Dan, what's going on?
Not too much. I've got not so much a car issue, but I got a theory about car people and how their car says something about them.
Ah.
I'll give you my data set that I made my thesis on. My parents, since I was a kid, my father bought Chevys and ran them until they didn't run anymore, 200, 250,000 miles. Every once in a while, he got bold and bought a Buick instead. But
Must have been one of the guys who sold my brother some cars over the years. Because Tommy never bought any of his cars until they had 200,000 on them.
No,
so it's your father's fault.
My father drives him to the junkyard, so unless his brother's shopping at the junkyard, I don't think that was him.
It might have been. It's exactly where he shops.
All my cars there.
All right. That mystery solved, but go ahead, Dan.
Anyway, my father is under the belief that a car comes into its own at about 100,000 miles, and then it's a good car.
Yeah.
He's been married for 53 years. There's five kids in my family, three of which have adopted, including myself, have adopted his philosophy, buy a car and just run it until it doesn't go anymore.
Yeah.
All happily married. one sister, one brother. New car every year, both divorced. So my theory is people who keep their cars longer keep their spouses longer. So.
That is very, very interesting.
Sure, no, Dan, I agree that there are some people who are dissatisfied with what they have almost from the outset.
And people who are willing to put up with all kinds of misery and pain, like a 200,000-mile Chevy, they'll stay married forever.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. It's not better anywhere else, right?
I think your theory is brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, I can see that. You're sure. I mean, if you're willing to put up with...
A 200,000-mile Chevy.
Yeah, then...
You got to have a lot of patience.
So let me see. So you don't buy your cars until... What does it say about you? You buy your cars when they have 200,000 on them.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
And what does it say about your willingness to... Or your spouse's willingness to accept pain and suffering?
Well, it must mean that I marry a lot of older women.
Yeah.
And I do. I mean...
She's got a few miles on her, right?
She's, well, my brother has inflicted a lot of punishment on his cars and his spouses.
And my spouses, too.
Well, Dan, I like your theory.
All right.
I do.
And I don't know what it means, but I suppose you can spot somebody who's likely to stick with you through thick and thin
by the kind of car
that person owns.
There's more to be learned from this, too, because my brother who got divorced, he's now driving old cars.
Yeah.
Not by choice.
Not by choice. Well, he may learn something from driving these old cars.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
Right? He may learn that there's more to life than driving a flashy new car and or spouse.
Exactly. I think just for the heck of it, we should put this little theory up on the website and give Dan credit for it. And we'll ask people what their positions are and whether or not they agree with his theory.
Just how long have you been married and how many miles on your car?
Yeah. I can just see it now. You may be in line for an honorary PhD in sociology from UNH.
There you go.
So don't do anything for the next couple of weeks. They may be calling.
There you go.
Brush off your cap and gown.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks for your call, Dan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I love it. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rebecca from Greenville, South Carolina.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Greenville, huh?
Yep.
Well, that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does.
Yes. So what's on your mind, Rebecca?
Well, I was wondering why I have a 2002 Ford Escape that I've had for about 3 years. And whenever I use the air conditioning, my eyes start to sting and burn, and I can barely see from whatever's being blown in my eyes. And I'm just wondering if you guys know maybe why it's doing that, and if there are any filters or anything I can add to prevent it.
And this happens when you use the AC?
Yep, just when I use the AC.
Is there any aroma associated with this?
No. Mm-mm.
No?
No.
There goes three answers that we had.
I mean, I know there's pollen, a lot of pollen in my area, but I don't understand why it would happen only in the car, not in my house or not outside.
Well, because don't forget, the air conditioner, even though you can direct the flow of air, is primarily blowing the stuff right in your kisser.
Right.
And I don't believe that your vehicle has a cabin air filter.
Okay.
And a lot of vehicles are coming through now with a cabin air filter, so it may, in fact, be the pollen.
I mean, it's kind of logical that it would do it, considering it's blowing pollen in my face, but I was hoping there was something I could add to it that would stop it, because it's really...
Oh, you were hoping that there was something you could spray in the vents.
Or like a little filter I could put in or have someone put in. I probably wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, you could try...
opening the windows.
But that kind of defeats the purpose.
I know. It's unfortunate, isn't it?
It lets the hot air in.
You could try wearing one of those full, you know, headgear gas masks.
Well, I have one, so...
Oh, good.
I'm already equipped.
No, I have to say it's very unusual.
Well, I mean, my eyes get irritated all the time in pollen season.
In the car?
Well, everywhere, but it seems if I'm in the car long enough and I have the AC on long enough, my symptoms will diminish.
Well, actually, now that you say that, I think I noticed that too.
Because I think what happens is when I first turn it on, it's blowing all that stuff in my face.
Right.
Because all that stuff is settled in the ducts. And it's blowing it in my face, and then I'm itchy and I'm going crazy. And then after a while, it's, I don't know what, either I've gotten used to it or there's no more getting in there.
Mm.
And everything settles down, and the lower temperature seems to make my condition get better.
Maybe I have to start the car up a little bit early.
Has it done this since day one?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, because
can I ask a question?
Sure.
What is this AC that you guys are
talking about? Well.
What
Man,
does that
down
mean?
Here, you really need it.
Yeah. Tommy's car not only does not have AC, it does not have heat either.
No.
Yeah, I mean, you may have mold doing this.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'd be surprised if it's mold.
Should I have someone look at it?
You might. You might call in the mold team.
A mold removal squadron.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things you can spray. You know, there's all the air that enters the cabin comes in right in front of the windshield through the cowl there, you know,
okay.
where the windshield wiper blades are. And you can spray stuff in there that will kill the mold.
Okay.
And we use a product called Frigifresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the brand name of the stuff, and I don't know what actually is in it. There's a warning on the thing not to breathe too much of it, but we don't care because we're not in the cars. It's the passengers. So. No, it's safe, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is pollen, especially if it seems to go up and down with the seasons.
Yeah.
And because mine certainly does.
If I paid really close attention, I probably would discover that.
Yeah. And Tommy's thing will work well, too. Open the windows.
All right.
Hang your head out like a golden retriever.
I think I'll try the Frigifresh. Maybe that'll do it.
All right.
Frigifresh.
Good luck, Rebecca.
Thank you both.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Sam from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Sam.
How you doing?
We're doing great. What's happening?
Scranton, PA. That's like steel country, isn't it?
Well, coal.
Coal, that's right. It. Coal.
The other end of Interstate 84 from you guys.
Oh,
right.
That's where it goes?
Go west on 84, you end up in Scranton.
I always take that cutoff that takes me down south. If I didn't do that, I'd end up in Scranton?
Thank God you take that.
Hey, watch it.
Right.
Scranton's
right.
A wonderful place. It's black, but it's good. Black.
It's good.
Yeah, from the coal.
Well, the coal industry is still going on in Scranton, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, they're still mining a bit.
Yeah. All right, what's going on, man?
I got a problem with family relations here.
Yeah, tell me about it.
My brother and I need help. We're getting desperate. We need a creative solution to keep my father from taking apart and wrecking Mom's car.
Really? Why? What does he want to do?
Oh, he's just handy, or he thinks he's handy. the car's a 98 Beetle.
And he wants to take it apart?
Well, yeah. Mom's had the car just about 3 weeks. My nephew had it since it was new, ran perfectly, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And within days, Dad's calling, I got a problem. There are 13 drips under the car. Something's leaking.
Yeah.
He rolls the car into his garage, and you have to understand, Dad's got a grease pit in his garage.
Oh,
he does,
man.
Huh?
How sweet it is. Is Dad retired?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's got about 800,000 miles on him.
what did Dad do for a living?
He had been a steam fitter, maintenance employee at a local manufacturer.
Oh, guy,
you're done for. What do you want to do? Kill him?
Well, that's why we don't want to kill the car. We got a call from him about a week ago. Car wouldn't start. Had to have the car towed 60 miles to the nearest VW place. Battery was dead. Dad had been playing his polka tapes, got the tape jammed to the radio, and when he shut it off, the tape player was still running, idling, and it ran the battery down overnight.
Yeah.
It's a good thing the car wouldn't start because the leaks had been coming from the power steering unit.
Uh-huh.
Dad saw that, fixed that, topped off the fluids, but he didn't top them off with VW-approved fluids. He put some other stuff in there.
That he had left over from 1941.
Could be.
Yeah.
And had the car started up, he would have wrecked the seals on the power steering unit.
Well, I doubt he would have done that, even though they told you he would have.
But next time he will.
But he'll find some way to wreck the car.
So how do we keep him busy? Can we super glue close the hood so he can't get at the goodies in there?
I don't think you want to stop him from doing this.
I know you want to, Sam, but you can't. Because think, if you do discourage him or even thwart him, he might start, like, rewiring the house. I mean, what would be worse?
Now, the guy's got a grease pit in his garage.
Yeah, he's been waiting to retire so he could do just what he's doing. And if he puts the wrong fluid in, or he over-tightens something, or he listens to too many Bud Hundinsky and his Polka Corsairs tapes in the car, so what? You got to let him have some fun.
Oh.
Yeah, let him go, man.
But make sure that your mother doesn't drive this car anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's going to be a death trap.
No, I have faith in Dad. I really do. Anyone who listens to polkas is going to be all right in my book. But I would get him. You know what I would get him? The factory shop manual.
All man alive.
That's an idea.
That is an idea.
Go to the VW website and order the thing. And this way, he'll have no excuse for breaking stuff. And furthermore, he'll know the jobs that he should and shouldn't tackle.
All right.
He'll love you.
Shop manual.
Yeah,
good idea.
See you, Sam.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again.
What's happened?
You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blooper, Penaloser. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Wichita, Coleslaw, Lobster Claw, Vichy Soise, Flavor Straw, Faux Foie Gras, Spring Thaw, Gnaw and Chaw is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shawa. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our videographer from the Tel Aviv office is Shlomo Replay. Our automotive schematic reader is Saul Greek to me. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group, of course, is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Louis Dewey, known to the overeducated pigeons in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers. And remember, don't drive like Tommy.
And don't drive like me.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1221, download some classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, learning to drive.
You are, huh? Finally. Well, better late than never.
No, not me.
Oh, no?
No.
Well, look, it's the season for teaching young people to drive. If you've got a teen who's about to drive, or recently started driving, or recently drove your new Porsche through a Dairy Queen window, check out our teen driving area for lots of useful advice. It's all available right now over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Ivan Pavlov reflexively rolls over in his grave to turn off the radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.